Welcome to a new episode of The Brand Called You. We brought some really, really iconic individuals, and today we have a person who I have tremendous respect for, Deepankar Savalkar.
Thank you.
Deepankar, welcome to the show. Deepankar is a chartered accountant. He's got 25 years experience as a business leader. He's currently the India advisory leader of PwC with almost 6,500 people who work for him. He's been recognized by various international bodies and a very respected chartered accountant. So Deepankar, you know, after finishing your CA, you chose to get into practice rather than follow the corporate career.
Yeah.
What made you do this?
I must confess, it was not an easy decision given the circumstances which existed those days. This was, you know, late 80s and early 90s. And it was like, if you didn't get a job in corporate, you kept in profession. But I chose the profession despite having a job in a bank at some point in time. So the reason was very simple. The reason was I just love interacting with people. And as a professional, you get to interact with different people from different organizations. And honestly, you get to learn a lot each time one of those interactions happen. Let's take this one. There's a learning in this for me as part of this interaction, right? So that is the enriching part. Also, I just felt that I contribute more at a professional level by staying in the profession rather than going to a corporate. Of course, it's a personal view, but that was the reason really what drove me to stay in the profession.
Very interesting. And over the years, I mean, you know, 25 years in practicing, the needs of the corporate world have changed, and the expectations of the auditors and the private practice and the people who are practicing has changed.
Yeah.
What is beginning to change? I mean, there have been some very iconic issues that we have faced and some amazing successes.
Yeah, so I think so. The answer is in various parts from this. Let's just break that up to what has changed as far as corporates go. I think so. If you look at the recent events, both globally, and then you can cascade that very easily into our Indian environment.
Yeah.
One of the biggest issues which is causing out there is what we are calling the whole age of disruption. And two, the shifts of economic power or demographics or technology shifts are also creating certain other fundamental changes. Whilst there are others, but the other big one is trust. And if you see many of the uprisings or public or within a corporate changes are being caused because people are lacking this trust. And I think so for us as professionals, it is, you can see that is coming into our domain now to say, what are you doing? We trusted you to be our eyes and ears. Auditors are saying that, yes, we are your eyes and ears, but we are certain bound by certain rules. I think so, and that's a personal view, but I think so that view or that approach is not finding many takers. I think so auditors need to change. There has to be more reform coming through on audit. And that we can see is coming through. All large firms are saying absolutely we support reform and audit.
Correct.
So to the reason being, how do you bring this trust factor back? So that is the big change, if you ask me, which is happening today.
Mm. And it's also interesting, you know, again, for a lot of our young listeners, most of the firms, like PwC, are in multiple specialities.
Yep.
And audit is only one of them. And that seems to be the one that gets the maximum amount of visibility. But you are in the tax practice, you are in the advisory work, you are in diligence, forensics, and everything else. Talk to us a little bit about how these firms are structured.
Yeah, so I think so. The genesis of all our firms have been in audit, right? And whilst it has reduced as time has gone by, but I still believe that a brand still gets defined in a majority way by audit. It doesn't only get defined by audit now. That change has shifted, but it still gets majorly defined by audit. And I think so that's the recognition which we carry, because we've been doing audit from day one. Other parts of our firm have got added on as auditors have chosen or have tried to say, okay, how better we can serve our clients. And then they become big enough to be on their own, right? So I think so that is a very key element there. For us, now with the changes in audit practice, I think so we will always be there. But then when you think about tax, the same clients require a lot of tax advice, which they would also seek from auditors or from consultants, right? And an auditor needs to understand certain tax issues and the implication on financials, right? Similarly, on the advisory side, there I think so has been the biggest growth outside of audit and tax or traditional areas, right? And the biggest one there, which for us in PwC especially, is around the whole transformation agenda for the clients, right? So, and that is again a sweet spot for the profession as a large, that how do you help clients transform themselves?
And you lead the India advisory practice. Help us to understand what is the scope of work that you do.
Yeah, so jokingly, I always say is that, so people ask me, you know, the part of your card says advisory leader, what does it mean? I said outside of audit and tax, everything else is advisory. It's one way of looking at it. But the way we will look at our market is in broadly four buckets. One is the whole transformation bucket. Secondly is the digital bucket. Third one being risk and regulatory, and the fourth one is deals. So we look at our advisory world in these four areas. And if you really think about any work which we do, we'll categorize in one of those four by and large, right? So if you talk about forensics, it gets under risk and regulatory. If you talk about due diligences, it comes under deals, because that's what it is. So the mindset is around these four buckets. That's the whole gamut. The focus today, honestly, again, now is a lot. What we are saying is that how can you solve business problems? How can you add value to a client by leveraging the technology tools which are available today? But do it in a way which is absolutely bespoke for that particular entity. So I think so the shift has happened is that the days of copy-paste are over. Right, candidly, right? You could do one particular template and then you could do variations of that. It doesn't work anymore.
Okay. And, you know, in the India advisory practice, you've got almost 7,000 people.
Yeah.
What is involved in managing such a large number of highly ambitious millennial professionals?
Yeah, it's candidly, Ashutosh, that's a challenge which we face on a day-to-day basis, right? How do you relate especially to the Gen Zs and population and millennials and everything else, their aspirations are changing. Honestly, organizations like us, which provide a very stable environment, have to change themselves to their needs, right? And that's where I think so we are facing the challenge. And we are adapting to it, but candidly, again, we have a way to go there. So to me, the other part of managing this business is around how do we remain agile. Every organization today needs to think about how can it be disrupted from outside. We can be disrupted from outside. When I look at our businesses, I say, we used to do so much of work with banks around the anti-money laundering area. We got disrupted in that world because a few startups came and came up with really good technology tools driven by AI, could do the work in one-tenth the cost, and we got disrupted. So keeping that in mind, I think so that is the biggest challenge which we face as an organization, managing such a large piece.
And also probably managing expectations of all these young people.
Oh, yeah. But you know, I really enjoy that piece, interacting with them. So go on a floor. Just sit down, have a chat with them, and they are quite enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. They really want to understand things from you. They ask you very direct questions, including something on very simple stuff that, why can't you make sure that the parking is sorted out?
Yeah.
or even something really, really important from how, why aren't we getting feedback the way we are? Why aren't you challenging us more? So you get, but the good part is that they're not afraid or stymied in asking you the questions. And that is really good for us too.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned that you have been involved in reimagining business.
Yeah.
Very intriguing two words. Without disclosing client names, etc., help us understand what does this mean?
So, again, it goes back to what I was saying, that the changes which are taking place across our world, right? So if you were to take issues around disruption, and I'm just taking that one, right? One can talk about asymmetry, one can talk about age, one can talk about climate change, but I'll just take the disruption element around the whole technology space, right? Or how technology or technology solutions are causing disruption. The CEOs are really asking us that how do we deal with this? You know, they're worried that can we be disrupted tomorrow? For example, banks are worried about that we are this big organizations, but is there death by a thousand cuts for us? You know, for banks, they talk about that. Then how are we changing ourselves against a very nimble and agile payment bank, right? So how are we doing this, right? How do we reimagine ourselves, right? Actually, I tell them two things. One is that you as a mindset, do you have a reactive mindset or a proactive mindset? I.e., someone disrupts you and then you react to it, or you are willing to disrupt yourselves and make the change, right? I think so the organizations who play the right balance between the two are the most successful. Mm. You can't be either or, yeah, right? And that's really reimagining the business. So for example, having a product company become a managed service company, i.e. I don't sell products anymore. The product remains mine. You just pay for the service. Now that is a fundamental shift in your entire sales organization. Mm. So you got to reimagine that whole business as to what it's going to be.
What is the responsibility of the promoters of the company or the directors of the company to make sure that whatever they are declaring is right? Because, you know, it's easy to shoot the messenger who's the auditor, yeah, and, you know, hold the auditor accountable. But that's really a post-facto, yeah, exercise that is done of something that should have been, they should have been vigilant about.
Yeah, I think so. It's a very important issue and goes back to the fundamental case of trust, right? And like for us, our purpose is to solve complex problems, but the second element is building trust in society. And what you see is that when one or two such issues happen, yeah, that trust breaks down.
Yeah.
And then you have a whole bunch of these other cascade impacts of that. What should the, you know, I think so it's enough been written around that what should the boards do? What should the corporate governance be? There are two points which I believe, and I think so this, we can debate and argue around whether the extent is right or are they, you know, the way they're going about it. But fundamentally, I think so what they're trying to bring in is what I call a respect for the law, which I feel is a good thing. Mm-hmm. So that will change behaviors. That there is that, okay, you know, if you do your business well and clean and be disclosed, well, no one is going to come after you. But in case you do cross the line, the entire power of the agencies of the government will be on you, right? So I think so on a first principles level, that's a good thing which is happening, which will change behaviors. The second one, I think so, which is happening is around promoters for the first time know that they can lose their companies. And if you look at the headlines even today, it is about profits are private and losses are social.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was a great statement, which I think so the chief economic advisor made. I may be wrong, but I think so he made that. And that's very important. That if you're an entrepreneur, yeah, government will create the ecosystem. But coming back to disclosures, yes, you know, if they're not there and if directors do not do their job, it's important to call it out so that they do it properly. The risk is, or the fear is, the overarching reach or creating an environment of fear. I think so. What we don't want to do is create an environment of fear, because that's what then will collapse the system, and no one will want to be director. And that's not an answer. That's true.
That is true. So someone sent me a very interesting new definition of EBITDA, which said earning before I tricked the auditor.
That's a good one. I'll remember that.
So, you know, I keep wondering, you know, I've been on several boards and there is a certain fiduciary responsibility.
Yeah.
But surely I must recognize that I cannot keep on covering my books forever.
Yeah.
Someday it'll get caught.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think so that my experience has been that when it happens for the first time, it's best to call it out then. Otherwise, you are in this downward spiral.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what happens.
Correct.
Because now you've not called it out the first time, you don't call it out the second time because fear of why didn't you do it the first time.
Yeah.
And then hoping that it will turn around. It doesn't. That's not the real world. And then you see this happening, and at some point in time, it all blows up.
Correct. So, Deepankar, you are seen as one of the leaders in forensics in our country and probably in the world. What goes into a forensic audit? I mean, you know, you're called in by the authorities and then you get into it. So, just to understand the process.
Yeah, so I think so. It's an ability. I would say forensic accountant is a very roll-up-your-sleeves type of work and grinding work. It is about turning over every stone patiently and diligently and seeing what's under it, not assuming anything, right? So I think so that's those are some few basic principles on forensic accounting, right? But just broader, what it really is that things go wrong, and when they go wrong, who is someone who can say that what went wrong, but more importantly, contextualize it? Because where I find people do not do, with this 2020 hindsight, they refuse to contextualize why a decision was taken at a particular point in time. Because, you know, you can interpret it in hindsight whichever we want to. So it's important for a forensic accountant to say, yeah, no, this decision was one of the possible decisions which could have been taken, and you have to give the benefit of doubt to the decision maker. It's very easy to say, oh, you didn't see this so obvious, right? No, it's never so obvious, right, in real world. And you are a business person also, so you understand that, right? So I think so that, to me, a hallmark of a good forensic accountant is about creating the same circumstance and explaining that to the larger stakeholder population on an action which was taken and whether it was right or wrong.
That helps me understand much better. Deepankar, you're also one of the most highly rated persons in India as an expert witness in disputes and arbitration.
Yeah.
Help me understand, what does this mean?
So what this is, that there are commercial disputes. Commercial disputes always have two sides to it. One is a legal side to it, but second is, I always say, is a number side to it, right? And they have an interplay with each other. How do you legally interpret would have ramification on the commercial, or what the numbers will then pan out to? Or vice versa, how the commercial construct was will impinge upon, or say, okay, what does the legal situation would mean? Or what laws will be applicable, so on and so forth. As an expert accountant, or an expert in any area, but my expertise is in quantum on accounting and quantum. It is about very independently looking at a commercial dispute and saying, what are the commercial implications of this dispute for one party or the other? Preparing a report, giving it in the court or an arbitration, and then stand for cross-examination on that report, right? So, you know, and I frankly, I really love that work, because if you're not independent, you get found out. Because lawyers are really good at that, you know, good at grilling you. Two, you are at a professional, you are pitting your wits against the best of the best. And that from an intellectually satisfying level is very, very, very satisfying for me.
Interesting. So before we move into the next segment, you know, a lot of your colleagues in PwC will watch this program.
Hopefully.
With you. I'm sure they will. you know, is there any kind of message you want to give to all your colleagues?
So there are just two or three messages, right? One, always be hungry to learn, right? I have changed or reinvented myself now three times around in my career, and that has always helped me, right? Number two is around how do you leverage this large platform of PwC and meet your personal objectives. I think so that's the beauty of being in a firm like PwC, that you can be an intrapreneur, so you can do very entrepreneurial things and have the support system and environment of a large organization. And I think so those are the two messages I would leave with for my colleagues.
Fantastic. So, you know, the message you're giving me reminds me of 1979 in ITC when Ajit Haksar was the chairman of the company, and you spoke of intrapreneur. And I remember talking to him, and he told me of you need to be preneurial, which was a professional entrepreneur.
That's true.
So similar kind of messaging.
But that's the beauty, right? You can be that, right? And it's just amazing, right? I you know, people come up all the time and say, Deepankar, can we invest here? Can we do this? And I honestly say that, you know, the idea is good. The person, I trust the person that he will deliver. I'll always say yes. Because, you know, with our platform, 8 times out of 10, we'll make it a success. And that's the beauty.
Fantastic. So I'm going to move into a few questions about you. You know, you said you reinvented yourself 3 times. I've known you for many, many years. You know, you're a very humble individual, and yet you're a successful individual. What is the secret of your success?
I think so. I'm just by nature someone who likes to do newer things, right? So for me, that is my high, right? And perhaps that's what made me change or paths, right? So I was an auditor. I really loved doing audits. And one day my boss says that you want to do forensics. And I'm like, you know, I have a really good career going. Why do you want me to change? And he said, no, I think so you can do it. And I did it. It paid off. Then later on, you know, an opportunity came to be a business leader. And I'm like, okay, I'm doing forensics. It's really great. I'm a forensic guru. Why should I change into a management role? But I thought, why not? And I did that, right? So, but each one of these roles have had a lot of learning for me to do, right? And I think so that's really what I feel is what's kept me ticking.
Interesting. So a question I ask a lot of guests, and you know, you lead a very, very busy life and you travel a lot. When was the last time you did something for the first time?
When the last time I did something for the first time? Yeah, so we just, whilst I've been on a few driving holidays, we just came back from a pretty rigorous, adventurous road trip to Kashmir and Ladakh. And the good part was I did 60% of driving. My friend did around for the balance 40%. And some were really treacherous roads. And I thought that, you know, for us to undertake that was pretty aggressive, given the type of roads, the terrain which was there. When we came back, we actually said, geez, did we really do that? So yeah. That was perhaps something recently I did, which I really loved. The other piece, again, I did skydive. One week after that, my wife's 50th birthday, she has a twin, they decided to go skydiving. And they looked at me not with the kind of that you are coming, it was just that you are coming.
Mm.
And it was a bit scary, but you know what, I really enjoyed it. So that was the first time again.
Amazing. That's on my bucket list also. I don't know if I'll ever do it. You know, given your work schedule, how do you manage work-life balance?
I look at work-life balance in a slightly different way. It's not about working 8 hours, 9 hours every day and then having off. I think so. It's about you. To me, it's about planning.
Yeah.
I think so. I plan my diary pretty well, and that's why I'm able to manage my time better. The other piece, which I think so, I'm quite focused on, which I tell everyone, is to do you have me time out of your office time, right? And which is to ponder and reflect. That also just gives you a bit of a downtime, right? So I keep 20% time for myself, right? And the day I find I'm not doing it, means I need to delegate something more. So I think so, those are the 2-3 things I do just to manage that work-life balance. The reality is that in other ways, we are 24/7. You know, you are on global calls at 4 o'clock in the morning. So it's not that you don't have to do that. You will do it. But given the nature of the work, this is how I think so you manage your work-life balance.
Okay. And the question I ask a lot of guests again is, what would be your learnings from some failures?
Yeah, so my biggest learning is not to be in denial. What I mean by that is, can you dispassionately look at it as if a third party is looking at it from outside and analyze it and then see what went wrong and hopefully never repeat that mistake again. So I think so that has been my biggest learning from my couple of failures which I've had.
And my last question, watching you and your success, there'll be a lot of young people who will be listening to you. What would your advice be to a young chartered accountant starting out after qualifying?
Yeah, so to me, for a chartered accountant, for that matter, any young professional, would be to remain hungry and never stop learning. I think so in today's environment, it's so important. Like the firm has done that, but I've done that myself earlier. I just learned how to make bots.
Okay.
Right. So we kind of did that. We said, okay, how do I use virtualization tools? Right. So I may not have to do it, but yet when someone presents that to me, I need to understand what it is at a fundamental level. Right. So I think so. To me, that has always been there. And go beyond just what education teaches you and learn from life experiences.
Deepankar, thank you so much for being on our podcast. I think all your comments have got a lot of wisdom, a lot of experience sharing, and I'm sure it'll be loved by our audience. Thank you again for coming.
Thank you very much, Ashutosh, for having me here. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.